Part 1. The Ship. Chapter 1. The young woman stood at the rail, just a few yards away from the gangway, looking out toward the city. The sky was a pleasant mix of clouds and sun for mid-June. The wind blew at what few strands of strawberry blonde hair escaped her ponytail. She smiled to herself. The city of Portland, the largest city in the state of Oregon, one of the best deep-water harbors on the west coast of the United States. Not that there really was a United States, or state of Oregon. Her smile fled. Nonetheless, this was her new home. She easily picked up her travel bag, looping it over her left shoulder. Her smaller bag she held in her left hand. She turned toward the gangway. There, the midshipman saluted her with a polite smile, which she returned. Saskia had been so helpful toward her on their voyage over. "Goodbye, miss," he said quietly. "Do your best." She bowed to him. "I will." Walking down the gangway toward the quay on the west side of the Willamette River, she could not help but notice some of the looks she got from the natives. A civilian, a girl, and at very least Celtic, if not Irish from her looks. What was she doing on? Stepping onto the quay, she turned and bowed low to the vessel that had been her home for the last few days. Her imperial warship, guided missile destroyer Congo, safe at harbor between the Steele and Burnside bridges in the heart of the city, the only functioning port between Vancouver in Canada and Manzanillo in Mexico. A message, she thought, of hope. She turned, ignoring the staring, and set off at a brisk walk in the direction of the Customs and Immigration Office. As all sailors with leave had been through some hours before, there was no wait time. The clerk behind the counter could not have been much older than she appeared, perhaps in his mid-20s. She smiled as she'd been told to by her family. Happy to be at the center of attention of such a pretty young woman, the clerk sat up straighter and adjusted his necktie. "Afternoon, miss. How can I help you?" he asked cheerily. She handed him both her passport and special visa. After studying them, he looked up at her. You're a Japanese citizen?" "Subject," she gently corrected him. "I am a subject of Her Imperial Majesty." Oh, sure, of course. He began to stamp things, pausing to regard her visa. "And you're here to study?" "Yes," she replied. "I shall be attending Portland State University." He brightened at that. "My aunt is a professor there. What are you studying? That is, if you don't mind me asking." She shook her head with a smile. "Not at all. I'm in the College of Engineering and Computer Science. Where does your aunt teach?" Now he was grinning. "In the same college. In computers, I think. This is so great." They stared at one another for a moment. She glanced at her papers before him. "May I go?" Taken aback by his own unprofessional behavior, he tried to compose himself as best he could. "Of course," he was sweating now. "I'm so sorry, Miss—" he glanced at her visa as he stamped it. "Miss Clark?" An Occidental surname? He handed her things back to her. "Please," she said, lightly touching his hand with hers, "call me Nicole." "What's your aunt's name? I look forward to meeting her." "It's Vicky Bishop," he replied. "Would you like me to arrange a ride for you?" "No, but thank you. It's not that far, and walking is the best way to learn about a new town." She glanced at his nameplate. "Thank you for your help, Mr. Beauchamp." She nodded and made to go. Half standing, the clerk replied, "Please, call me John, Miss Nicole. She glanced over her shoulder. Her emerald eyes almost seemed to flash at him. "Thank you, John." He sank back into his chair and was still for a few moments. "If the phones are working, I am so calling my aunt tonight, and I think I'm going to start hanging around the PSU scene." As Nicole ambled southwest through the city, toward the campus, she took in her surroundings. The buildings here in the heart of the city were in surprisingly good shape. Like every other city in America, Portland had lost a huge swath of its population when the U.S. economy ground to a halt overnight. However, their just-elected mayor, Lee Sanchez Johnson, had turned out to be clever and unscrupulous enough to not let his town fall into barbarism. She paused at a street corner to let a slew of bicycles and a few horse-drawn carts go by. Nicole had read, before she'd left Japan, that what little gasoline and diesel still being distilled in the city went south under guard to the farmers and ranchers of the Willamette Valley to keep them in operation and the city survivors fed. And those survivors bent to keep the great deepwater port open for trade goods that went down the Columbia River and to keep the hydroelectric dams running and electric power flowing. Just then there was a flickering. Lightning? No. As a slow dusk fell, a tall black lamppost at the edge of the university flickered to light. Nicole looked up and smiled. For her, this was not just light, but life. Considering the time, she realized there was little left. The school's employees would soon be going home. She picked up her pace, passing against the thin stream of students and faculty already headed the other direction, towards what she had memorized as the Student Union and Administration Building. The security guard told her that the elevators didn't work. Since she needs to see someone on the fourth floor, would she like him to watch her luggage? She shook her head with a small smile, and up the stairs she went. Coming out of the stairwell, she almost bumped into a woman in her late 50s, who was about to leave. "Excuse me," Nicole said with a bow. "I'm here to meet with Mrs. Patricia Franks. Could you please tell me where her office is?" The woman sighed, obviously put out that her departure was about to be delayed. "Sure, follow me." She led them down a hallway to their right. Along the ceiling, about every fourth light was on. "Spare parts must be a problem," Nicole thought. The older woman took a key from her pocket and unlocked a door, swinging it open. "There's no one here." The woman moved around the desk and flicked on a small lamp. She sat down. "I'm Patricia Franks. How can I help you?" Nicole gasped and dropped her bags, bowing very low. "I am so sorry. Please return to your home. I can sleep outside tonight. I did not mean to keep you." Franks slapped the top of her desk. "Stop talking nonsense," she said curtly. "We are not hanging on to civilization just to have girls sleep outside. Now, judging by your behavior, you must be Miss Clark from Japan." She stared at Nicole as she continued. "We were expecting you yesterday, but the Pacific is a big ocean, isn't it?" She tried to smile, failed. "Please sit down." Nicole did as she was bidden. "We had a slight delay," she acknowledged. "The ship's captain encountered some pirates off of Kamchatka and wanted them suppressed." "Such things happen in the world we find ourselves," Frank said softly. The older woman pulled a moderately thick file out of her desk and flipped through it, squinting in the fading light. She passed Nicole a small manila envelope. "That's your key and a map to your dorm room." She smiled grimly at something. "Before the breakup, no one wanted to live on campus. Now it's a matter of survival. Ah, and here, this is your temporary campus pass. We'll get you one with a photograph in a few days. I must impress upon you," her eyes narrowed, "if you are on campus without a pass, at best, you'll be forcibly escorted off. At worst, if it's night, shot." She tapped the top of her table again. "These are odd times we find ourselves in. Do you understand me perfectly, Miss Clark?" "Yes, thank you." Franks looked once more into the file, but shook her head. "I recall that you're for the Engineering and Computers College, just not the details." She then looked out the lengthening darkness. "Let's have you here at 9 tomorrow morning?" "Good." She stood, Nicole did as well, retrieving her bags and moving into the hallway. The woman locked her office, and they made their way down the stairs and outside. Nicole looked around, the lights ablaze about the campus. Franks followed her look. "Safer to keep these lights on than the offices." She leaned over and took the temporary campus badge, clipping it to Nicole's collar. "Your dorm is just over there," she indicated, pointing north. She finally smiled a little. "You go rest, and welcome to Portland." "Thank you so much." Another small bow, and Nicole set off determinedly toward her new home. The sun was now well below the west hills, and the sky was a complex palette of red to pink to purple. That was something new for her, so used to the bright city lights. She slowed her brisk walk and stared upward, ranging her head from west to east. In the periphery of her vision, more lights came on. Insects began to circle in around them. What was purple was now black and moving west. Narrowing her eyes, she sang very softly.
Nai, watashi hitori, yoru no machi, akaru, mado no akrifu, no nioi, kanjite, sukoshi, ikimochi.
She allowed her voice to trail off. It was best she get to her dorm. The sharp sound echoed around the school's buildings. Startled that she let someone get so close without her knowing, she turned in the direction of the sound. The single clap was joined by more. Two young men stepped out of the shadows just ahead of her. Students. She focused on the first, and then read the badges they'd clipped to their navy athletic shorts. She relaxed, slightly. The one on her right stopped his applause and smiled at her. That was absolutely beautiful, even if I didn't get a damn thing past night. He was a few inches taller than Nicole, maybe 5'10", but so powerfully muscled and broad under his gray t-shirt that it made him appear shorter. His hair color was difficult to tell in the twilight, but it was some light tint. Oh, as he came forward under a lamppost, she saw that it was an oddly faded brown. He smiled more broadly. His left hand held a sports bag of some kind over his shoulder and extended his right. Hope we didn't scare you too bad, he laughed. Kind of rare to see girls out after dark. I'm Jill Creef, by the way. She took his hand and gave a small shake with a tiny bow. You make me older. Thank you. My name is Nicole Clark. Letting go, her hand hung slightly in the air as she looked toward the other. Joe punched his shoulder. Dude, manners! The other came forward a step. He was taller than Joe and thinner, but wiry in his own right. He set down his bag and held out his hand. Gilhaven, he said quietly, taking her hand firmly. At least 7 inches taller than me, she thought. She could not tell where his black hair ended and the night sky began. He released her hand and stepped back lithely, cat-like. Nicole had an odd feeling, something she'd never felt before, and it scared her a little. My pleasure, she murmured. Hey, Joe almost yelled. We're headed home after swim practice. Which dorm you in? We can see you to it. She looked at the small envelope. I'm in the Stratford, it seems. It seems? Joe's face fell in puzzlement. You're new here, Gil said directly. She nodded. That's right. It's so interesting to meet new people. Oh, Joe said, recovering. I'm in the Stratford, too. Mr. Lone Wolf there actually lives just off campus. How about we head off? Nicole, was it? Thank you for your escort, she nodded toward Gil. And a pleasure meeting you. She and Joe had just taken a few steps when Gil called after them. That was Japanese, that song you were singing, right? She stopped and turned. Yes, it was. She smiled, hopefully. Anata wa Nihongo ga wakaraimasu ka? He guessed at what she was asking. Nope. He smiled for the first time. But you have a lovely singing voice. See ya. He walked off into the twilight. She continued on with Joe. Passing under another light, she saw him looking at her. Yes? Oh, nothing, he laughed. Gil's only half right. Not only a voice, but you're a looker, too. Nicole stared ahead. She couldn't blush, but she knew this would definitely be a time to do so. That voice, those looks, Joe continued, always loud. You'd make a great model.
I am. Number 5, she said absently. Joe hesitated, half a step.
What was that?
Oops. Nothing, she gave what she hoped was her cutest smile.
Oh. Silent for the few minutes of their walk, they drew up to the Stratford building. It's guys on the first couple of floors. Girls on up, Joe said, pointing as he spoke. Safer that way. Nicole nodded. What she had read at home was correct. Political correctness had died with the mass famines of the breakup. They walked through the entryway. Another young man, with a rifle behind his chair, sat at a desk just inside. Sup, Joe? Who's this? Your girl of the month? Joe knew not to argue with the armed, but Nicole was amazed to see him swell even larger in suppressed fury. Such your face, Bill! He tossed his hand in her direction. She's a new tenant. Nicole placed her two bags down and handed her envelope to the man called Bill. He looked quickly at the paper inside and nodded.
Floor 4, room 8. He couldn't seem to bring himself to smile. Welcome to your new home, miss. I'll help with your bag, Joe called. Wait, that's... Off balance, he pulled up on the strap. She heard something odd from his shoulder.
Ah! He cried.
Are you all right? Nicole stepped to him and pressed her hands into his left shoulder from both front and back. Ah, nothing broken.
What the hell is in this thing, rocks?
Noticing her touch, he stopped. He looked down just as she looked up. Before, in the dark, he'd not seen the little splay of freckles across the bridge of her nose.
You'll
be fine, she said calmly, easily shouldering her main bag and picking up her other. See you later. Joe watched as she made for the stairs. It wasn't until Bill cleared his throat that he collected himself enough to go toward his own room. Lightly furnished is more like barely furnished, she thought, as she moved about her little room. The small bathroom had a door, but the rest was an efficiency kitchen and a table with two chairs that opened onto where the twin bed sat.
Ah, well, a place is only a place. It's people that make the difference.
She parked her large bag in a corner and set her smaller one on the table. Opening it, she took out a cord. There, by the stove, was a plug for one end. She draped the other end over the back of one of the chairs.
I hope I can do my best, she said softly to the dark.
She unbuttoned and removed her mauve blouse, then removed the lime sleeveless undershirt below. For just a moment, her right hand reached across her chest to let her fingers touch the tattoo on her upper left arm. She shook her head. She arched her left arm behind her head. Inches below her neck, her fingers pulled the skin apart. With her right hand, she plugged the other end of the cord into herself. Her emerald eyes flared slightly at the power input.
It has been a very big day. Time to rest.